Flying away. Let's see. There. I have small ears. Okay. It'll pick up my voice. Yeah. I usually don't need a mic. So, hi, I'm Franny, and I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. And this isn't where I want to be. I'd rather be in the seat down there, just so you know. But Owen so generously showed up at the first picnic meeting planning, and he nabbed me. And I'm like, yeah. I said, no, I can't do this. And he says, yes, you can. So I'm here tonight. I'm going to talk about why I came in. I came in to fix someone, and it's fallen off. Okay, I came in to fix someone. That was the only reason I came in to save my marriage, because this person had something going on and I needed to fix him. So I thought Al-Anon is the answer, because I had heard you go to Al-Anon. So that was the main reason I came in, and I wanted answers. I am a person that likes to solve problems. There's no questions asked. If there's a problem, I like it to be solved. And that's the way I live life is, you know what? I don't live out in the other universe. I live where there's a problem, you fix it. The toilet is plugged, you fix the toilet, correct? That's how I live my life. And so that's the only reason I came. I needed to fix someone. And I came to my first meeting, and I heard some laughter, and I heard people laughing about their behavior. And I was taking their inventory the whole meeting. You know, I don't do that. No, I'm not like that. And I really sat in the corner, next to the door. I pulled a chair next to the door, and I beelined out because I didn't want to be there. And my intention was never to go back. I don't belong here. My higher power had another message for me in the middle of the week, and I got that message loud and clear. You need to show up at that meeting again. So I did. I went to the meetings, and what I heard were people talking about their feelings, their behaviors, and it floored me because they were being so honest. I was just like, wow, that's not what you do is you talk, you're here to talk about somebody else. You're not here to talk about yourself. And I saw peace in people, and I saw smiles, and it made me feel safe from week to week. I didn't want to be there, but I still felt safe for a whole week until I went back. And then I began to feel like I wasn't criticized and judged. And that was huge in my life. And no one stopped after the meeting to gossip about whoever talked at the meeting. And that was another big part of my life is usually there was a meeting after a meeting in the family I grew up in. And it was to talk about those that weren't there and criticize and judge and make fun of. And so that didn't go on. And I was just amazed because people were being honest and saying things that, man, if you would have asked me, I would have gossiped about you and, you know, talked about how crazy your thinking was, but that didn't go on. And, you know, the other part that didn't go on is nobody gave what they did for a living, how many kids they had, what faith they practiced, and how financially they were secure. And that was the other thing that I only knew about when I met people is how many kids you have? What kind of job do you have? Did you go to college? Do you have financially security? I mean, those were all the things. What faith do you practice? That's how I grew up. My family and the family that I grew up with, it was really important that you got to know the people in that way, not any other way, not how they're feeling, not how they, you know, what's going on in their life. It was all that fluff, fluff, fluff. So I kept coming back to these meetings. And then, you know, I'm still waiting for the answer, right? I'm still waiting, you know, I'm thinking, okay, 2 months in and there's going to be an answer, right? And at the same time, nothing was happening. I was married to an addict alcoholic, and you know, neither one of us knew how to communicate. Neither one of us knew how to problem solve, as all we knew how to do was trigger each other and be angry and critical. And so that's what I came in with. But in these meetings, I heard get a sponsor. And I thought, ooh, that's the key. I'm going to get a sponsor, and she's going to give me how to solve the problem. So I was really excited, and I asked some money to sponsor me, and she said yes. And she said, but I have these strict guidelines. We meet weekly. I need to know your whole story. And then you need to learn about alcoholism. And I'm thinking, yeah, I know everything there is to know about alcoholism, because an alcoholic to me was somebody that didn't show up for work or actually was in the gutter, because that's what they were in my hometown. And I thought, okay, I can do this. And her love and her compassion with me and her gentleness as I walked through the steps with her was the first person that I felt like I could be honest and truthful with in my life, and I could say anything to. And she never came back and judged or criticized me. But her favorite line to me was, what's your part? Because my first probably 6 months, I always talked about him or my kids or my job or something else. And she'd always say, but what's your part? Now, you know, tell me what your part in all that is. And I never liked it, but I began to open myself up and to see that, yes, I did have a part. And then she began, so we worked the steps, we worked the traditions, we worked the concepts, and she was a real firm believer that you didn't just work the steps, but you had to do traditions, because that's how it taught you how to have relationships. And she knew I needed help in that department. I didn't know how to have a relationship with people, an honest relationship. Fluff, I'm really good at, oh, everything's great, everything's fine, but to really have an open and honest relationship. So we did work that. And then we continued to work every Monday night, and we go to open AA meetings. We went to a lot of open AA meetings together. And before I started the steps, she made me read the first 167 pages of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we went through that piece by piece, because she says, you have to understand about alcohol. You have to understand what your spouse is going through. And we referred back to that book many times when I'd come in and start jabbering about him. And I'm so grateful for that, because I did learn about alcoholism, the disease. And I did learn a lot from her about alcoholism that I would have never heard if I didn't read those first 167 pages, and if we didn't attend open AA meetings. That was such an eye opener. And she used to always say, think of their pain, think of their pain. And it really did make me have more sympathy and empathy for the alcoholic. But, you know, the marriage didn't last, because we didn't know how to communicate. And I was enmeshed. I was so enmeshed. I wanted him to get better, and I couldn't do my program. I could not do my program, because everything relied. I needed to make sure he was okay, and how's he feeling, and how's this going to affect him? And it was really hard for me to disassociate or to detach with love. And so we separated, and there was so much bitterness that we did end up divorcing. And that was good. That was really good for me, because you know what? My program kicked in. It was that time that I started looking at my part. What did I bring to the equation? Oh, and you know, it was really important, because she made sure that God not only was in my head, but was in my heart. And I will call my higher power God. And she reinforced that this program is a spiritual program. And I'm so grateful for that, because I didn't have a relationship with higher power when I came in. I had a faith in a higher power, but I didn't have that relationship. And I'm so grateful for that. She got me into service. She told me that, you know, I can't keep my program unless I give it away. So I got into service. And through service is when I really got to see my defects of character. Oh, they glared at my face. One of my first services is I was just day in Al-Anon, right? And I thought, oh, I can do breakfast. This is great. This is really easy. And on the committee, we had monthly meetings, and you know, you got to ask for help, Franny. You can't do it on your own. So, oh yeah, I got my, and they'd say, well, do you have people to help you? And oh yeah, I got people to help me. And it was put out breakfast food and make sure the coffee was all going all day, right? So I had people for 3-hour shifts, right? 1 hour here, 1 hour, 1 hour for the 3 hours. And so the day of, I am sitting at the breakfast area, and one of the committee members comes and says, well, what workshops are you going to today? And I said, I'm not going to any workshops. I've got to do the coffee all day. And they're like, well, didn't you get people to help you? And I said, yeah. Well, do you think they know how to make coffee and put out food? Yeah. Well, why aren't you going to a workshop? And I went, you know, he says, you know, I think that might be helpful. And I'm like, wow. And, you know, I did. I went to two workshops that day and I quit playing the martyr that, oh my God, there's nobody that can make coffee like me and nobody's going to put out the grapes and the breakfast food like me. But that's when my glaring control, my control and my perfectionism and no one can do it as good as me came out. And, you know, once I started seeing that in service, I started doing other service and it really helped me to focus on what's my part, manipulation, control, judging, criticizing. And so I was in the program about 5-6 years and they asked me to help in Alateen. And I said, no way. I've got 4 kids. They were teenagers and young adults. And I said, but I will service them as drivers to and from programs. And so I'm in the program, things are going pretty well. You know, the kids, it's pretty rough on the kids with the divorce because dad and I are we can't be together. And I thought, you know, and I was getting out there and doing some things and I was feeling really good. And then I hit a really lull part. And by George, I got a call the very next day and said, do you think you could sub at Alateen for 6 weeks? Our sponsor's no longer there. And I said, no. And she says, well, you know, there's only a couple people that can do it and we'd really like it. It's only 6 weeks. And I'm thinking, okay, higher power, this is not funny. I know you're knocking on my door and, you know, just tapping me saying, maybe, just maybe, just maybe. And I said, okay, six, I'll do it for 6 weeks. Sure. And I thought, what am I going to do for Alateen? You know, and she says, all you do is show up, sit at the meetings and maybe share if you need to. It's their meeting. It's not your, you don't need to offer anything else. And I'm thinking, okay, I can do it for 6 weeks. So I go in and I'm petrified. You know, there's teens sitting around. And as I go into this meeting and the other sponsor's sitting there. And I mean, I'm looking and I'm thinking, you have got to be kidding. I'm dressed casual, you know, just, and she's the fashionista. I mean, she's dressed and her hair is all colors and she's got beads coming down. And I'm thinking, holy cow, what am I getting myself into? We couldn't have been more opposite. We could not have been more opposite. And what I learned is she had a passion and love for those teens. And it's where God wanted me to be. But boy, did I judge her when I walked in that door. I'm thinking, what are you doing dressing like this? This is a meeting. And, you know, why is your hair purple at your age? And why do you have beads in your hair? Yeah. See, and I'm years into the program. But I did that for 6 weeks. And at the end of 6 weeks, I was really enjoying it. And it came time for the teens to vote if I got to stay in the meeting. And I'm thinking, you are kidding me. What gives them that right? Right? And so they said, yeah. And so, you know, I said, oh, I'd really like to continue. I've enjoyed my time here. And I had to step in the hallway. And I will tell you, up came the abandonment issue that I had as a child. Oh my God, I'm not good enough. I didn't do enough for these teens. They're not going to want me. This is terrible. And I'm sitting in the hall and I can't tell you how many things went through my head. And the next thing I know, they came and got me and they said, we want you to stay. And what that did for my program, because in those books, when we're reading week to week, they're talking about how they felt as a child. They're telling stories, and then they would share how alone they feel in high school and how they felt like an oddball or, you know, and in the stories, the same thing. And I'm thinking, wow, it brought back my memories of high school, how I felt like an oddball at times, how I felt out of place, how I felt so different and like I had nobody to talk to. And I knew the family I grew up in was chaotic. I had a mom that was a rager, and I thought that was all. And parents didn't get along. And I began to see for the first time my family of origin in the real light, because we all looked good on the outside, but that inside house was chaotic. It was scary. I was in fear a lot. Is mom going to leave? Is dad going to leave? Is somebody going to hurt somebody? And that came out in Alateen. And then the next thing I heard through the weeks was about the crazy parents, and reading about the crazy parents and talking about things. And when they would share, it was things that I had done that day with my kids, or I had done in the past. And it was like, wow, this is where I need to be. And through Alateen, I really got to delve into my program and see what I came from. Because if you would have asked any of my siblings or myself or my four children what kind of family I came from a perfect family. Nobody did anything wrong. Everybody's educated. They all have these wonderful jobs. They're all in these wonderful marriages. They all have wonderful kids. And that's how it looked on the outside, but that's not what I lived. And I realized that, wow, I need to start being truthful. I need to start owning up to that. Because all this time, it was always their dad's fault. Their dad came from this. Their dad was the alcoholic. I got to see my part. And I would have never been able to go through that pain without sitting there year after year with those teens and then saying to them, wow, you know, you're talking about the way I just behaved with my kids today, or the way I behaved with them this week. And, you know, I can tell you I'm doing the best I can. And just being able to share that with the teens was wonderful. And so I continued on with service. And, you know, as service comes to an end, I felt, loved those teens, but, you know, you have to pass on. So at the time, you know, I'd been in the program 8-10 years, and the kids were tired of dad and I trying to get together and fist fighting with each other, you know. And they had a talk and said, you know, you're both our parents. We'd like to be able to do holidays together without the tension and the screaming, not the screaming, but the franny. Cold shoulder, got the wall up, you know, don't you dare come near me because I've got to be tough, because that's how I was raised. And, you know, with teens, I began to kind of lighten up and my life became a little bit easier. And their dad and I started talking and we decided that, you know, it was a good thing. We need to get together and be able to have holidays with the kids. We have four kids. They started getting married. They're going to have grandkids. And so we were able to do that. And I'm very grateful for that. Several years later, he lost his house and we now share a house together. And there's a reason for that. I know my higher power is telling me, work on your communication skills, Franny. And I'm going to go into that. But what I decided to do was I'm going to build a new house, right? I've got a program and it's working pretty well. And I'm feeling pretty good about my life. And there's kind of a breath that I've exhaled and I'm feeling a little lighter. The wall is starting to come down. I don't feel like I have to have the answers to everything. I don't feel like I have to be the number one person at work, and I can make mistakes, and I'm starting to feel all this and I'm feeling really good. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to build a house, and my house has got a really good foundation. And that foundation is the spiritual program, God. So my house is built on God today. And I can say that is, it's solid. It's not going to move because it's got a really good foundation, and God is my foundation today. And if you would have asked me that when I came in, no, I needed to be in charge, right? But I'm willing today to let God in charge. And then I put up studs for the framing. And my frame is made out of the steps, traditions, and concepts. And they have built the walls around my house. And then I decided I'm going to put up new walls. And the walls are the wonderful gifts of this program. the real principles of the program: integrity, honesty, willingness, faith, courage, trust. Ooh, trust. And sponsorship. And the biggest one is humility. So when I'm doing that, I'm able to finally make amends to my kids. Not just living amends, but amends. And I'm starting to be able to admit my part to my kids and then ask them, is there anything else? So this new house, as I'm feeling really good and I'm thinking, okay, now I got to put the roof on, right? And the roof are all of you here, the meetings I go to, the phone calls I make, the people I sponsor, and the Forum magazine, the speaker meeting. That is now my roof on my house. If I don't have all those things, my house is not going to be. But I do have open door policy because I want to be willing and I want to be open to everyone. Because in my life, I judged, I criticized, and I didn't want people in my life unless you looked good or had this or had that. And today, no, my doors are always opened. So that is why I came in. Now, I want to talk about why I stay in this program. Because March 17th, I came in, and 20 years ago this March. And that's a big day in my life. March 17th, where I grew up, was a national holiday. The town, everything was closed at 9 a.m. Every bar was opened, and there is a bar in every corner and every middle corner. Everything was painted green. There was corned beef and cabbage all over, and there was a parade. And I'll tell you, by 12 o'clock, everybody was really drunk. I mean, really drunk. Then by 6 o'clock, you were up, 6 p.m., you were doing your second round, right? So I go to my first Al-Anon meeting Monday night, St. Bonaventure, St. Patty's Day. And I'm thinking, wow, my life has really gotten changed. And I am so grateful that I walked in those doors. And I'm so grateful that I heard laughter and I saw nods and I saw people that looked happy. So I'm staying today to build those relationships. You know, I have got almost 20-year relationship with some of the people in these rooms. That's the longest I've ever had a relationship, an honest, solid relationship. I mean, to me, that's amazing because I cut people off. If I didn't perceive that you did something that, or you did something wrong to me, I just cut you off because that's how I grew up. And so to have these relationships, I need to build them, but I realize that I can't build them without the traditions and the concepts. And, you know, I love these rooms, but I have needs. And what happened this year is my need was to be in person. It was to be in meetings that were in person. I was finding Zoom that, man, I'd turn the camera off and I'd write letters, I'd do laundry, and I wasn't hearing the message. And I could feel myself getting really squirrely. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't need to go to a meeting. Yeah, I'm good. And I know I need to go to a meeting. And so I was going to one in-person meeting and I knew I needed another one. And so this is where I know I need meetings. I made the decision to go to an in-person meeting and stay in person. But lo and behold, I didn't communicate that. I just said, hey, we've decided that we're going to be an in-person meeting. No group conscience, no decision-making. That's how I lead my life. I've made a decision. I'm going to do it this way. I hurt a lot of people. I know that. I realized that, you know, I have to communicate. I need to have these tools at least every week, twice a week, because I still lack those ability to communicate with people, to tell them, you know, my needs are, I need to go to an in-person meeting. I can no longer attend Zoom. Instead of just saying, this is the decision. That was my part. I've made amends, but I have to look at why I do the things I do. And it's, I do that with people. It's like, you know, I make these decisions because they're for my needs, but I forget to communicate them or talk about it. And I know that's why higher power has the kid's dad and I living together, is to learn those communication skills. And I know that's why I have to keep coming to meetings. And the traditions help me with that. They really do help me with that. And I know I blindsided people by my decision-making without the communication piece. So that's why I'm here. That is why I'm here, and I will keep coming back. I have a lot to learn, and I'm not perfect. And today I can say, that's okay. And today I can be grateful for that. And I'm going to leave you with a reading, but I'm also going to leave you with something that happened on my way here tonight. And I am so grateful for these rooms, because people in these rooms taught me, you know, if you want a relationship with your kids, if you want a relationship with people, you know, keep your mouth shut when they're not asking for your opinion, right? So my oldest son took a year and a half sabbatical from work, and he's 40, right? He's an adult, right? He's got the right to do that. He hasn't asked for help financially. He hasn't asked for anything. And he started a new job. And he's got a lot of me. Got to be perfect. Got to do it right. And it was pretty intense. And so hadn't heard from him. And so called him yesterday. And we were talking. I said, how's everything going? How have you been? And he says, well, Mom, I quit my job. And I said, wow, that must have been a hard decision for you. But it sounds like you're taking care of yourself. And he says, yeah, I really am taking care of myself. And I really needed to do this for me. Now, I said that in my head, whoa, how could you? Are you dumb? Are you stupid? Do you know what the economy's doing? And I didn't say any of that. And I just said, I'm so happy you're taking care of yourself. Well, so tonight on the way down, he calls and he says to me, Mom, I want to thank you for the support you gave me yesterday. Wow. And I'm thinking, thank God for Al-Anon. Because people in these rooms have reminded me, you know what? They don't ask your opinion, give support. And I'm so grateful for that. So I'm going to finish with this reading tonight. And I want to thank all of you for being here and allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. It is just my story. And I'm going to read from February 26, because this really spoke to me. We all make mistakes, but hopefully, as we apply the Al-Anon program and continue to grow in self-awareness, we will learn from those mistakes. Amends can be made for any harm we've done, and we can change our behavior and attitudes so that we won't repeat the same errors. Thus, even painful past experiences can help us learn to create a better future. The greatest obstacle to this learning process is shame. Shame is an excuse to hate ourselves today for something we did or didn't do in the past. There is no room in a shame-filled mind for the fact that we did our best at the time. No room to accept that as human beings, we are bound to make mistakes. If I feel shame, I need a reality check because my thinking is probably distorted. Even though it may take great courage, if I share about it with an Al-Anon friend, I will interrupt the self-destructive thoughts and make room for a more loving and nurturing point of view. With a little help, I may discover that even my most embarrassing moments can bless my life by teaching me to turn in a more positive direction. Today's reminder. Today, I will love myself enough to recognize shame as an error in judgment. And then this quote by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the ultimate lesson all of us have to learn is unconditional love, which includes not only others, but ourselves as well. Thank you all for letting me share my experience, strength, and hope.